We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
It feels like Miami.
Miami, Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami, Miami. Miami, Miami.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas. And with me today, you're watching on YouTube, to my left, our 2K coach, Frankie.
Less than our next guest, apparently.
Our what?
Lesser than our next guest, apparently, according to you in our last pod.
Oh, wow. That was me. Well, on the bottom of the screen, you can see our statistician and pun master of basketball news, Nikias Duncan, the great Nikias Duncan.
Hello, hello, hello. Just trying to get my 2K rating up so I can be a 2K coach as well.
Listen, no, Frankie's a 2K coach. Listen, yeah, Frankie hasn't locked down. Who wins at 2K? If y'all play, like, who wins?
Oh, Nikias. I literally haven't bought a 2K since 2K18.
Oh, wow. So you're, wow, the entire image, the entire empire is crumbling.
That's why I never understood the nickname.
I don't even remember how it started. Remember we started. Oh, because you had said in 2K once, you know, we run this kind of offense.
That was Alex. He asked Nikias before, about a 2K. He said, since you play 2K so much, what would you do? Instead of asking me.
Actual coach.
Yeah. Actual coach, Frankie. Okay. Wow. It's been a while. Listen, if you're watching on YouTube, you'll notice that my camera is a little different. Well, a lot of things didn't want to work today. So we're using the backup cameras, and we have this very unflattering angle. So if you're listening to us on our podcast feed, you can see this angle on YouTube, youtube.com/MIA Heat Beat. And we're uploading all the VODs to every live stream we do and every podcast. We upload the video to YouTube and check us out there. We're having fun. Also follow us on twitch.tv/MIA Heat Beat and follow our Discord server. That's going to be in the description to this podcast. Now, today we've previewed guards and bigs. Today we're doing wings, which is probably the most important position, positional group in basketball. And to start our preview of wings, let's talk about a wing that's not necessarily here yet, but might be here soon. And it's kind of the news of the day, really, because yesterday we had all the Harden stuff and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now, today's been a Giannis day because he still hasn't signed that extension. There's been a lot of very funny quotes on the internet about his extension. My favorite personal anecdote is, you know, Chris Middleton and some other Bucks, I think Pat Connaughton, gave him pens, right? They were gifting him a lot of a pen to sign, you know, as a joke to sign the extension. And apparently Giannis didn't really get it. And they just set 26 pens between Middleton and Connaughton. And then Giannis said that he didn't get the joke behind the pen gift at first and thought it was funny for the first few pens. Then it got old as more than 20 pens came from Chris Middleton and Pat Connaughton. That's from T.I. Windish on Twitter. That's fucking hilarious, Tekias. Like, the idea of your boy Chris Middleton just like being a reply guy to Giannis.
Yeah, like I'm all for a corny reference. Because that's just who I am. So I appreciate it. It's also hilarious that Giannis just didn't get it.
Yeah, that's so great.
I could just so bad to Giannis just looking at the pens like, what am I going to do with these? Why are these here?
You think they're nice pens? You think like they're Mont Blancs? Or do you think they're just giving them like, you know, by the Staples, you know, 10 pack?
Oh, they have to be nice pins. I would also say it's better for Giannis to have those pins than Pat Connaughton.
Oh yeah, maybe.
I'll leave that there.
Pat Connaughton was my favorite player the entire playoffs because every time he was on the floor, the Heat went on a run. It was really nice. I really enjoyed Pat Connaughton minutes.
He was so bad, and I just thought the fact that he was getting like fourth quarter minutes and Wes Matthews just kind of chilling on the bench after.
That's why Wes Matthews is a Laker.
That's probably it.
Like yeah, Matthews, you're Wes. I think it's funny that the Bucks really like they're gonna like legitimately probably depend on him in the regular season for minutes because like I mean, I think they rebounded really nicely from kind of the Bogdanovich fiasco, but I mean, they're a little thin at times.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I don't want to say tough. I mean, like Drew's probably gonna play a lot of two, and then they have like Bryn Forbes and DJ Augustine to kind of split up those like backup guard minutes. He's fine. Like I mean,
fuck,
you can
not shoot, a playoff like, guy.
What? Ask your Raptors.
That's the only thing. I mention this all the time, and I get made fun of because of how much I mention it. The lasting image of DJ Augustine is the Pacers literally could not survive minutes without George Hill because every time DJ Augustine came on the floor, LeBron and Wade smelled blood. They absolutely obliterated the Pacers in those minutes.
And DJ Augustine makes Kyle Lowry into whale blubber in the playoffs. So.
Ben Gordon did the same to Dwayne. It happens. Sometimes guys just come in here and they look amazing. And what can you say? Wade Ellington used to do that. Bucks Twitter is in a frenzy. Obviously, you know, with all the transactional kind of talk. I mean, I just think it's you know, Giannis saying that he's just focusing on himself, that he's not worried about an extension that's between my agent. It's also funny because it really sounds like when somebody tweets after a breakup. Yeah, I'm just working on myself right now. You know, I just care about me. I'm just looking to improve. It's like some shit, you know, some just retweeting inspirational Instagram messages. You know what I mean?
Like, buddy, you have all the information. Like, what are we doing here? Like, Giannis's whole thing outside of like being really good at basketball is just like all I care about is hoops. You know, I don't care about the outside stuff. You're creating a distraction. Like every day that you don't sign the extension or decide not to sign the extension is going to be a headline. So like if you want to be in Milwaukee as much as you say you do, which I believe, like Giannis is basically he's extended every possible branch to Milwaukee in their front office. Like they basically have to push him out for him to leave. Like that's just kind of been the vibe he's had over the last few years.
Like totally.
The fact that he hasn't signed kind of like a sign.
Yeah. Because the max, the contract is what it is, right? It's like, he's obviously getting the maximum of what he could be offered. So it's not even like, oh, this is a negotiation. I want this much money or I want the extra year. No, it's like literally like the most that this organization, the most that this institution can give you, the maximum that we are allowed within the rules of the league is offered to you. So you know what I mean? There's not a lot of negotiation.
Yeah, like it's a very yes or no thing. Like it's either take the full max or if you want to like haggle for a 1+1 or a 2+1, like sure. Like you can't get a super max off of that, obviously, because it's not 5 years. But like that's what I tweeted earlier. I'm just like, this is... hilarious because there is not a single offer that Giannis and his agent could send in Milwaukee that they would be like, you know what, actually, Giannis, no, how about this? Like, they're not going to send a counter offer to Giannis. Yeah. Like, yeah. If Giannis says, I want a 1+1, they will give him a pin.
Yeah, sure. What if you... They'll give him 30. They'll ask Middleton and Connaughton for their stash. And then
there you go. Like, if Giannis wants a 1+1, if he wants the full five, if he wants three, like, they're going to say yes because it's Giannis. So, like, for there to not be a deal yet,
it breathes life into so many, like, so Heat fans, obviously, you know, we're all hype, right? Because now we're back, baby. We're back. And then Raptor fans, I see people, you know, from our friends over at Dishes and Dimes, are like, oh, Uncle Masai is going to come through again. We're all back. Every fan base is like, we're back in, baby. Like, we are here. We're ready to go. Frank, you're laughing, but it's true.
No, I'm laughing because, I think NBA Twitter has, like, unanimously agreed that Dallas is, like, the best fit for him. But Dallas fans that I see are just, like, so self-deprecating that they're like, we never get free agents. He's not coming here.
It's also, like, Raptors don't get free agents either, but they're confident. They're preening. They're just like, we can do this.
Like, this is the one that they can get.
I mean,
they're probably so excited.
I think the Masai stuff's real. I mean, like, we talked about this in our group chat earlier. Like, they're going to get – it really feels like the Heat are going to get one of Beal, Harden, or Giannis. Like, it kind of feels inevitable. Like, one of them has to end up here, right? Like
– God, I hope so. So we have something to talk about.
I mean, the tea leaves are real. I mean, like – I was on Onside Radio with Clay Ferraro yesterday, and, you know, we were talking about, like, Pat always gets in the room. Like, Pat's always in the discussion. Like, even when Pat didn't have any cap space, you know, to sign LaMarcus Aldridge, back when LaMarcus Aldridge was an all-star, all-NBA caliber player, he only had a mid-level exception and LaMarcus took a meeting with him. You know what I mean? Like, Pat's always, let me tell you something. That team with Deion Waiters and James Johnson and, like, that team got in the room with Kevin Durant. That's kind of funny. You know what I mean? Like, let's think about that in retrospect. That Tyler Johnson and James Johnson and Deion Waiters and Hassan Whiteside, like, that group of guys, Pat was like, you want to play with them? And KD's like, well, let me think about this.
No, that wasn't the team. That was the one that went to 7 with the Raptors.
No.
That was before. Yeah, no. That was before. That was that summer because we didn't re-sign Wade.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. The Gordon Hayward one was the yes. And then when they signed the 4-year deals because they had everything in place before. Yeah. I mean, still, it's still funny that, you know, all this happened. So, I mean, we obviously have to talk about the transactional stuff, but we really want to move on to kind of the preview of the wings, right? Because the wings are the most important position in basketball right now, I would say. And the Heat have probably one of the best ESPN ranked. Jimmy Butler, our premier wing, as the 12th best player. I don't want to get too much into it. I'm a little offended that, you know, they beat Jason Tatum, and I don't think Jason Tatum could do with Jimmy Butler during the finals. I know Nikias is probably going to, Jason Tatum, blah, 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 Paul the scorer, this and that. I don't know. I'll take Jimmy. I'm scared because, like, I think the basketball hipster in me wants, like, feels like Jason Tatum's the right answer, but, like, the culture in me says, nah, fuck that, Jimmy.
I mean, that's definitely fair. I would just say, from my understanding of what the NBA rank, the ESPN rank is, it's a projection of how the players are going to perform this year more so than, like, how they rank coming into the season. So if they're projecting Jason Tatum to have a better season than Jimmy Butler, like, I don't super disagree with that. Like, I think Tatum and Butler were pretty much on par with each other last year. I think you can project for some progression with Tatum with the shot. Again, like, he needs to develop a little bit more in, like, the mid-range area. Like, he has no floater, which is the funniest thing ever. For a guy to be that, for him to be as talented as he is as, like, a mid-post scorer, as a three-point shooter, to have no floater whatsoever is just kind of hilarious. But, like, he's a fantastic defender. Like, he has basically everything you want in a wing. So, like, I can get why ESPN would rank him higher if they did.
He's not the playmaker Jimmy is, though. Like, Jimmy is just such a good guy, like, kind of creating for others and off the dribble. And, like, even, like, the free throw rates are, I don't even think, are close, even though Jason's, yeah, like, way younger.
Yeah, I think Tatum has improved as a passer. Like, the game is definitely starting to slow down for him. So, like, if you account for some growth as a passer, in addition to what he already brings to the scorer and as a shooter, and what he brings as a defender. Like, I just recently wrote, I did an Atlantic division preview for basketballnews.com earlier this week. And I wrote, like, Jason Tatum might be the best off-ball defender in basketball right now. Like, I don't think that's...
Over Giannis? Because, like, that help, you know, like he's just like, incredible as a help defender.
He is. I guess I'm looking at it in terms of, like, just the rotations themselves. Like, from in terms of wing defender, like, I view Giannis as more of a big. So I think that's kind of a different role there. But, like, just the way that, yeah, that Tatum's able to play between two, way he's able to dig and recover, just reading passing lanes, he is way beyond his years. And I feel like that's only going to get better as he learns, you know, gets more experience. So, I mean, the sky is really the limit for him, which, you know, Heat fans don't want to hear.
Yeah, I don't want to hear that. Frankie, tell us about how Jimmy's all about culture and, like, what he did to LeBron in the finals nobody else does.
Imagine if Tatum had a good coach, you know?
there it is.
I mean, but no. Frankie, seriously, like, we look at Jimmy, right? Like, the, you know, I know that we talked a lot about Bam and everything starts and ends with Bam next season, and kind of the leap he takes is going to be really telling. But what Jimmy does, I want to talk first about what Jimmy does defensively, because I think that's going to be probably the more interesting part of this team going forward this year, where there's a lot of question marks on defense, you know, without Jay Crowder and all that stuff. Like, I think his stuff off ball, on ball is just so critical to what they do. He's their best guy doing that right now. Like, you know, at the wing position. And I'm kind of, it's weird to talk about this team, Frankie, because there's like two ways to talk about them. Like, the regular season them and the playoff them, just because I think that we saw a bit that they're a 16, you know, game team more than an 82, or I guess 72 in this case. And I think kind of projecting what Butler's going to do through a regular season, where I imagine there's going to be a lot of rest and conservation of energy because he's probably still freaking exhausted, is really hard to project. But, like, the defense, I think, is really going to go as far as he and Bam take it.
Oh, absolutely. I see Jimmy, you know, I want to see how healthy he is coming in. You know, he had the short off season like everybody else in the Heat and the Lakers. But, you know, Jimmy's getting, you know, starting his first season in the 30s. I expect him to be in tip top shape, pristine condition. I'm really interested in his defense, because I felt like at times, especially in the beginning of the season, it kind of wavered the energy. Felt like he was conserving it at times. It wasn't like he doesn't do a lot of the pesky energy stuff he used to do when he was in Chicago early on, and that's a role thing as well, because you know, he has to conserve a little bit more. But he does such a great job, you know, using his hands. He's got some of the best hands in the league. He's pesky. He's poking at in the passing lanes, poking on drives. He can strip you if you're going up and you don't take it up strong. He's one thing we don't really talk enough about Jimmy, he's not that athletic. He's strong, and he's knows how to use his body, but he doesn't have quick feet. He's
not springy.
Long, right. Like, you wouldn't, like, he's not winning a foot race a lot of the times. He's gonna outwork a lot of guys, mm-hmm. and he's gonna give you 100 in a matter of effort. But as far as, like, you know, jumping out the gym and stuff, he's not going to do all that stuff. But Jimmy's, you know, so I feel like Jimmy's going to have a great second half of his career, because he's already learned how to play within himself physically. So I'm really excited to see him second season more comfortable. We saw a lot of it last season, especially in the playoffs. Jimmy running stuff as the big, using the DHOs as the role man, running elbow sets himself, pinch post. You know, I liked it because it didn't make Jimmy work so hard from the outside in, made him work 18 feet in, and he got to go to his spots. And Jimmy's a lot harder to defend when he's only a dribble or two away from the basket.
I loved Nikias when they were using him as a screener for the pistol sets. That stuff, they were getting good things out of that every time, especially against the Lakers. That was one of my favorite things that they were doing. They were just having him screen down there. And I was like, him as a screener, and I don't don't have this energy numbers, and I probably should have asked you that before the show, but I feel like his work in this, as a screener in this really motion heavy offense has been absolutely spectacular and under talked about.
Yeah, I feel like in certain spots, especially when you're closing games with Goron, you need a guy that can get it off the bounce for you that defense have to respect in those ball screen actions. I think using Jimmy as a screener is the smart way to go. Because if you get to a situation where defenses are blitzing those or they're just giving you a soft hedge or whatever, if you have Jimmy slipping into space, he wants to get downhill anyway. And now you have a defense in the rotation, which makes it a little bit easier for him to create those opportunities for himself at the rim. You kind of have to foul him at that point, and that's kind of where he lives.
So he likes him.
That's just a way to get him going downhill without him having to do so much work with the ball.
And I think with Tyler kind of probably taking a step forward as a ball handler, I think that'll probably help both of them. It'll give Tyler some on-ball reps, and it kind of gives some Jimmy a little rest.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, I think one thing I'm interested, just stepping away from the screening, I wonder what Jimmy's jumper is going to look like this year. As great as he played last year and how he stepped it up in the postseason, things of that nature, like it just now it's kind of gone under the radar that he just had his worst shooting season of his career. And like that kind of has to bounce back somewhat, I believe. I mean, like you get much worse.
24% from three, 24% on two attempts. And he's not that bad.
Yeah, like in theory.
His free throw percentage didn't dip, but it was definitely the in-game shooting from three and mid-range was horrendous.
39% from 10 to 16 feet.
Yeah, like that's just not him. So like ideally, I mean, they haven't had much of a break since the finals, but you would think that he's had at least a little bit of time to kind of rest the wrist and things of that nature. Like if the jumper bounces back at all, like he won't have to work as hard as he did last year to generate the looks. I mean, he's going to be cashing in more jumpers.
What if I tell you?
I was going to say he won't have to batter his way to the rim like every possession to generate something good.
So what do you think he shot from 10 to 16 feet in the playoffs? So that kind of really sweet spot mid-range jumper that he likes.
I'm going to say like 35%.
Frankie? So remember, in the regular season, he shot 10
to 16. Yeah. I would say like 46.3.
Yeah, 46.3. By 40, you just checked, you jerk.
Yeah, I was already looking at it.
Like, that's great. Like, I mean, like, if you're getting that guy who's, you know, especially like when he starts having more on-ball reps, you know, if guys want to duck under the screen, you know, he can really get to that pull-up really easy. They do a lot of kind of mid pick and rolls with him and Bam too, which I really like. I think that I'm not worried about the three-point shot as much as I probably should. I kind of, with Nikias, said I just think that might be a little randomness or some of the wrist. I think the playoff numbers on the mid-range, and it looks good. It's kind of like Dwayne, that even if it's not going in, it's like the shot looks good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you like the process. No,
didn't he have like a shoulder-ish ailment like early on in the season as well?
And a wrist.
Like a shooting shoulder and a wrist. Yeah, he shot. I'm looking at the numbers now. Last year from 16 to the three-point line, he shot 27.8%, and that is easily by far the lowest of his career.
And in the playoffs, that got to 41%, right? So he upped that decent all the time. Yeah. And in the playoffs, I think that was kind of really the best version, the most assertive. I thought that at times, you know, we saw some of the overpassing and the passive Jimmy that was a little annoying in the regular season, but I thought a lot of times, I mean, he really took the game by the horns against the Bucks. I mean, and what I loved how willing he was to hunt, right? Like, okay, where is Kemba Walker? Where is George Hill? I want him, right? Let me force the switch. Let me attack this matchup. Let me get these bigs out of the picture because I'm going to pull up and they're not going to be able to come really do much. I'm going to go one-on-one with a guy that's smaller than me that I'm stronger than. And that's one thing that they haven't really, because even Dwayne at the end, you know, would probably hunt more bigs than anything, but it really wasn't, you know what I mean? Dwayne was operating kind of sliding in that pick and roll, kind of going north-south, not really finding matchups to attack. I mean, it's been probably since LeBron that they had a guy that can legitimately go, okay, I'm going to pick who's the weak link. I'm going to find him.
All right. Dwayne, it's just let me find the youngest guy on the court so I can get a pump fake and get to the free throw line.
I'm going to show you the most veteran ass move ever. You ready? I mean, 10-year vets for falling for that. You know what I mean? Like, Kirk Heinrich was still falling for it. And I'm like, dude, you've played him forever. Like, come on.
Heat legend Avery Bradley would fall for it.
Everybody did. And how do we know? But I guess in the moment it's tough, but it's just that was always funny.
2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, and with more total visits than any other job site, according to Comscore, Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short-term list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try it with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
The wait is finally over. Football is back. And you might not be at the game this year, but you will be on in the action with Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure that you get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you the most options to wager than anyone else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head over to BetOnline today and take advantage of the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
I think I'm kind of wondering, Nikias, like we talked about this a little bit last show about kind of how the bigs are going to play defense. Do you think that they're going to go more switch, or do you think they're going to go more drop? Because that's really also going to determine kind of the wear and tear on Jimmy. I think with Avery Bradley, and especially if they start Myers Leonard, I think you may be able to do more of a drop, but I think when things are important, they're going to just go major switching. I don't know.
Yeah, I would anticipate it's going to be a similar diet to what we saw last year. I think it's going to be a lot of drop in the regular season. I think an underrated thing to watch in terms of that, like obviously all of these defensive scheme and those decisions are personnel based. I wonder what's going to happen with Kelly Olynyk. If he ends up getting packaged for someone, if he gets packaged, like if it's him and Kendrick Nunn or something, they get a different four, or if they, you know, if they swing for Victor Oladipo or whatever, like if they get a wing or they get a four, then it wouldn't surprise me if the Heat really lean fully into a switch heavy defense and just continue to hammer home those reps. It's kind of similar to, I would say, the 17-18 season for Houston, to where they just said, you know what, game one of 82, we're switching everything. We're going to go ahead and drill these principles now. Doesn't really matter about the wear and tear right now. We are focused on Golden State. We want to make sure that our switching is airtight by the time we face them. So I wonder if the Heat are going to fully lean into that switching style in that same way. If they do make another move, I think Kelly Olynyk is going to be the swing piece there. Because if you're saying if they do like flip Kelly and someone to get a four, then maybe that four in theory is going to be better than Moore Harkless. And if he's better than Moore Harkless, then he could probably, yeah, then he starts and then you just have Bam at the five and whoever you trade for at the four. And then you can just kind of lean into that. And then Myers becomes your matchup dependent third big. I was going to say, like, if nothing like that happens, then yeah, I think it's going to be similar to last year, where it's just going to be a lot of drop in the regular season. If they do start Myers at the five, maybe Bradley at the one, or if just Bradley has a big role during the regular season, it's going to be dropped. And then once the games matter, they're going to downsize. I think that's what we'll see.
Like, I think that they have a team of like really, really smart veteran guys, especially like smart defensive veterans, especially at the wing. I mean, Jimmy, Mo Harkless, Andre, right? Like, I don't think, you know what I mean? It's almost like, I think guys like that are going to be smart enough and they're going to be disciplined enough that they don't have to, you know, they can probably flip a switch and be able to kind of osmosis, you know, these coverages, maybe for the younger guys like Tyler and Duncan and all that, like, and we're going to get into Duncan later because he's huge to what they do. But like that's, I guess those guys are the ones that you're more worried about, but I mean, they're already hunted anyway. You know what I mean? Like those guys are apparently Tyler thinks that they're getting picked on because they're white, not because they're small and not that strong. That, dude, how did you experience that? That was funny. We talked a little bit about that like a couple weeks ago when that dropped. That was really funny. When Duncan and Tyler said that they were targeted on JJ Redick's podcast because they were white.
I didn't get that being like think piece the way it was. Like,
I thought it was funny.
Like it's their basketball players like joking around. They're white basketball players joking about being white NBA players. Like I don't care about that. Like if you watch games, you know why to get picked on. Like it's fine. It's not because they're white. It's because they can't move or they have weak cores or they don't digest plays quickly. Like it's, I mean, that's
or wingspan or wingspan issues.
Yeah. Like it's, it is what it is.
Kirk Heinrich didn't get picked on because he was white. He never got picked on because he was a good defender. That's all it was.
Yo, Dwayne would have Kirk Heinrich nightmares. That guy was brutal against the Heat.
Yeah. Like just let them have the jokes, man. I don't care.
I think it's funny. We laughed. We had a good laugh about it. I wonder how many games Jimmy's going to play. And it's really tough to talk about, but like, do you think that they have survivable offense without him for like, if he misses like, I don't know, like 10 games in this first half of the season? Like, do you think that their offense can really survive that? Because before when he really missed a lot of games, Justice was here. And Justice would kind of take the responsibility of, okay, I'm the wing that's going to trigger the pick and roll stuff and I'm going to do the handling, right? And we have Goran. But like, if Jimmy's going to miss like, you know, considerable time with rest with this kind of schedule, like I wonder if their offense can survive.
I mean, Jimmy's always missed games. Like Jimmy's only played over 76 games twice in his career. So like you expect Jimmy to miss games anyways. So
I'm expecting a lot this time though, because of the really short turnaround.
Yeah.
The strain that he put on himself in the finals.
I'm expecting like 55 games probably out of a 72. And that might sound crazy, but he played 58 last year. And yeah, so he didn't have a long playoff season. I'm saying for the fans, man. it all depends on who else is healthy, because it's one thing for Jim to be the only one missing, and it's another thing for Jimmy and Goran to both be missing time at the same time and Tyler and all this stuff. That's kind of where like that's where the Heat ran into some trouble in February, when it was like multiple guys missing time at the same time. It's all about timing. If Jimmy's getting rest at the same time as Goran, that I don't really agree with that, but you know, it's on Spo to try to get the guys ready and hopefully Hero and Bam can take another leap so they can shoulder a little bit more of the load.
I feel like Jimmy's Jimmy, and I feel like we kind of know what we're going to get. I thought Nikias asked a really good question about the jumper, but other than that, he's the guy on the team that you get, that you know what you're going to get production wise. And I don't think that there's a question.
Yeah.
The guy I don't know about, and I think he's probably the one I've been most excited to talk about since we started this, has been Mo Harkless. Because when they lost Jay Crowder, and I've said this before on the pod, they lost the ability to not only play up a position, because Jay, you know, could really play up a guy, right? Like Jay Crowder can really guard guys bigger than him, and he was strong, and he was not we all had our jokes, but like he was a plus shooter last year, despite kind of the unraveling at times and how he was guarded. I mean, he's a big reason why they were able to beat the Bucks, because of his spacing. And if they give him, so like Mo Harkless has a much shakier jump shot than Jay Crowder, and I don't think he's as strong, and I don't think he's as good guarding up. Now, Nikias, I know that you've talked at length about this, and we have not talked about this yet. So I'm really curious as to how you feel about that.
I think those are fair critiques if you're just comparing Harkless and Crowder. I think Crowder does have the ability, the numbers are the numbers, but like he did a fantastic job of at least making Anthony Davis work. And that is no tall task. He defended Giannis in the second round. Like he has experience kind of playing up. Like he's been doing that basically his entire career. I don't think Mo Harkless is a guy that can do that. What I do think Mo Harkless gives you is a little bit more versatility defensively. Like he can switch out on guards more than you can trust a guy like Jay Crowder to do. And I think that's going to be important in certain matchups. Just kind of eyeing the, let's say, the Boston matchup with the Heat getting in the playoffs. Like I think Harkless would probably do a better job on a guy like Jason Tatum than Jay Crowder would, for example. Jay Crowder's the guy you want on power wings or like those four or like traditional fours like Anthony Davis. More Harkless is the guy that you can switch out on like a Tatum or Jaylen Brown, those kind of guys. So if you're worried about those kind of wing creators, then I think Harkless helps. The three-point shot has always kind of came and went with him. And it's felt worse. And in a way, it is worse because the volume also hasn't been there.
Yeah.
So Jay Crowder might have a 3-for-10 or 3-for-11 night in three, but at the end of the day, he gave you 9 points on threes. A Bo Harkless bad night is 0-for-3, and that's just kind of it because he's just not shooting enough for it to matter. Eric Spoelstra has already talked about Harkless being a good shooter and how he's already in his ear about letting it fly. So I'm curious to see what that's going to look like. I don't like the bar is the floor for Mo Harkless to have a career high in 3-point attempts because I think he's only eclipsed two like once or twice in his career.
Yeah, twice.
So if Harkless takes 4 threes, 5 threes a night and shoots it at a 32-33% clip, that isn't great.
God, it's bad.
it's not great. So I don't want to sugarcoat it. But also, if it's that in combination with the growth from Bam, with what you're getting from Jimmy, with what you're getting from Duncan Robinson, if Tyler Hero slides to the starting lineup, you know, the improvement from him, that combined with Harkless taking more threes and hitting some, like I think that's fine, especially once you add in the added versatility that you get defensively. So I do think on balance is going to be a fine pickup. And, you know, it's a 1-year flyer, so it's not going to have any really long-term implications there. And if all else fails, you just go to what you saw in the regular season last year, Myers at the five, you know, you replace Mo Harkless at the four with Bam Adebayo. So I just don't, there isn't really any downside. I feel
kind of think that's what they do anyway.
Yeah.
Especially at the start of the season. Now guys, do you buy into this theory that I have that? So Miami's kind of shot doctored. I don't even want to say shot doctored, but they've really had guys come in here at that position, like James Johnson, like Jay Crowder, who's have career years from three, and Luol Deng, right? And I kind of have a theory because they don't really have like guys. I don't really think it's them shot doctoring it, right? I think it's more there's so much motion in Eric Spoelstra offenses, especially post LeBron, that, you know, if you're a guy and you're screening for an action and then you're flashing out or you're really involved in whatever the set is, when you catch the ball, you're in rhythm. You're not PJ Tuckering it in the corner, right? Where you're, you know, you would get called for an 8-second violation if they had it in the corners. You're always moving. And when you get the ball in rhythm, I feel like that's an easier way to make a shot. And because you've touched the ball, because you've been involved in more actions, you know, it's I don't know. I imagine you're getting a rhythm. I don't know if that holds any water. This is just how I've always felt. And I was kind of wondering what you and Frankie thought, because I know you guys are a lot smarter than I am.
I would say that I'm gonna have a short answer. I'll let Frankie take it. I feel like I'm talking a lot. But I say that it definitely makes sense. And I think in addition to that, it's just having so much confidence instilled in you.
Yeah.
You know, like going back to last offseason or last training camp when the Spo comment on Duncan Robinson made the rounds where he was like, hey, he's already one of the best shooters in the world. He doesn't have to prove it. And then you go to Basketball Reference and you see what Duncan shot from three in the handful of games that he played. Just like, are we sure about this? Or going back a year or two before with Wayne Ellington. It's like, no, we want Wayne to take 10, 15 threes. I think when you empower guys, in addition to the rhythm that they have being involved in those kind of offensive actions like you spoke to, it is easier to establish a rhythm. You have more confidence. It's an easier ball to shoot. You're not worried about being pulled if you miss two shots in a row, as long as they're good shots. So I think all of that kind of factors into it.
Yeah, I feel like it's also a case by case issue as well, because you know there's a guy like Shane Battier who you're not going to have him run around on offense. You want him to set screens, pop, or at the most as his movement and or spot up, and you want Ray Allen moving around a lot more to bend the defense a little bit. So it definitely matters on what kind of shooter you are. Because a lot of guys, I've asked players that I've coached before, you know, like, how do you feel more comfortable? Are you more comfortable as a spot up guy having your feet set already? Are you good coming off the screen, catching it, setting your feet in one motion? So it's a lot of technique. You know, guys like Duncan has elite balance coming off screens, coming off handoff. He sets his feet so well off the 1-2, off the hop, whatever you want to look for. Guys like Hero, really good at it. I feel like some guys that are used to having the ball in their hands, especially like young guys growing up in college and stuff, early on when you start throwing them in the corners just to spot up and don't involve them in the offense, those kind of guys struggle with it. Some guys like Mo Harkless is used to just spotting up because that's his whole role. I feel like what Spo's trying to do here, like Nakia says, is empower him. Trying to say, hey, look, we believe in you. I'm not going to take you out as long as you're playing hard. Just keep shooting and try to see if that confidence is what he needs. And it honestly might be with Harkless. One thing that concerns me is his corner shooting for his career. Corner shots are usually the easiest three-pointers. That's the shortest one. They're vast majority of the time assisted. So it's a catch and shoot set shot, and he shoots 32% from the corner for his career. So, and that's usually a pretty good mark of what you are as a just catch and shoot guy, if your corner shot. So I'm concerned with it. I'm hoping it's a confidence thing, maybe Spo and, you know, a little couple technique things they work on to just get his shot a little more fluid. But as long as he's playing defense and shooting, the open shots, you know, he's what he is. He's a solid guy.
I think the interesting thing about Miami's offense is, like, if you look at where Jay Crowder's shot diet came from, a lot of it came from like the break, right? Because, you know, you have him screening in those actions, or he's either screening for Duncan or Tyler to kind of curl off into that handoff or whatever. And then that's where he is. And he's usually stationed there. And same with, you know, if Bam ever gets a shot, I imagine the diet of the shots would come up from where he's doing the handoff, because he's not really a stand in the corner guy. The corner guys are usually Duncan relocating, Tyler relocating, Goran relocating. Their wings are typically not shooting from the corners, which I feel is a little backwards, because most of the NBA would have guys like, you know, your PJ Tuckers, your Robert Covingtons, right? Kind of spotting it from over there.
Your 3-and-D wings.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of diversity in the way that Miami takes threes, and I think that, I don't know, I kind of feel like, I actually think Nikias is like underestimated. I think that he might shoot like 34-35% from this. I mean, he's had a 40% season once. That might have been a contract year in Portland, I don't remember, but like, he actually wasn't Maurice Harkless the one that was right at 40% for the season? And then if he missed a three at the last game of the season, he would lose a bonus or something.
It was 35%, but yeah, that was him.
Yeah.
$500,000 bonus in the contract. He shot 35% for three. He just stopped taking them for the rest of the year.
That was so funny. And he finished with 35.351. I like, you know, Nikias, when you said the thing about the guards, I thought that was interesting, because like when I was watching film for a piece I did last season about Miami switching, you know, they would switch a lot of Jay Crowder onto guards, and that like rarely went well. And like, you know, the guards were Trae Young and Kemba Walker and, you know, Luka, who's not really a guard, but whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it just never went well, but those are like transcending guys. And I think the foot speed, that's actually really interesting, because I didn't consider how that would work kind of sizing down, but I thought that they relatively solved that, you know, especially because they're comfortable switching Bam onto those guys, right? Those quicker, smaller guards.
I think Bam's really comfortable and he's done a good job. And like, if anything, they're forced into like a 35 footer. Like he really baits him into it.
Yeah. Yeah. But the issue with that is when Bam is the lone big is who's the backside guy. Bam goes to help, Bam goes to switch. If it's not Jay or Jimmy, it's Goran, Tyler, Duncan, guys who are not going to be much of a force, full impact at the rim. And that's why you see a lot of those rim numbers when Bam is at the five, bleed. It's because they try to force Bam away from the help from the rim. And that's why Jay was such a big help for them, because he was gave him something on offense, being the fifth option and hitting shots and
a body.
He was a body who was tough inside and strong. So with a guy like Mo, he's so skinny. So you hope for that he can get feisty in there. I see him playing a lot more three and four. I feel like Iggy will be the power wing more often than Mo. Yeah, I know. Same.
I mean, like, and that kind of gives us a nice transition. I mean, we can go either Andre or Precious, but I really kind of wanted to get into Precious, because last time on the pod when we talked about bigs, we talked about Precious if they choose to use him as a big. But I think that he could be a very effective wing for them, and he could be kind of that power forward, kind of can guard the Jason Tatums, the LeBrons, the Giannis's, right? He can be that power wing defender. And kind of to your point about Bam, they can put Precious on ball to keep Bam helping. Or kind of going back to your earlier point about Butler and the athleticism, like, Precious is the freak athlete. And if you want him to be roaming and helping, I mean, between him and Bam, I think theoretically, that works really nicely. You know what I mean? Like, go.
No, I get what you mean. I probably still wouldn't classify him as a wing, just because he's not going to be doing wing things offensively for starters. Like, or if he is, then that's probably where you're going to see like Spo asking what's going on out there. If he's trying to get coast to coast early on. But I do think you're onto something in terms of defending like the power wings, just because he does have that frame 6'9", 7'2" wingspan, I believe is what he is.
Big boy.
Yeah, so like he's listed at what, 230 somewhere in there. Like, I think he is a guy that you can throw on a LeBron. Like, it probably isn't going to go well because it's freaking LeBron. But just in terms of like,
eventually,
the front archetype, like, I get he would be the guy to have those assignments. And I think within that context, it's going to be important to see like what his jumper looks like moving forward. Because again, Mo Harkless doesn't have a rep as a shooter in terms of accuracy or in terms of volume. Precious doesn't have really the volume or the efficiency right now either, just in terms of like the college sample, the high school sample, whatever. But he does shoot an easy ball. So if he does get those reps and he's comfortable taking them from the corners or whatever, if the volume is going to be the same and you get into a matchup to where you need someone to defend like a bigger forward, Precious is going to be more physically capable of handling those matchups that like Jay Crowder took on last year than Mo Harkless would. So that's where it just gets into Mo Harkless being a regular season placeholder. And if Precious is coming along with a jumper, then you give him the 4 minutes and then you just kind of go from there.
Like, why can't he be some sort of facsimile of Jeremy Grant on offense? Like, why do you just like, it's not like, you know what I mean? Like obviously not that he won't have those ball skills or whatever, but, or the shooting, but I think he could be some sort of rookie, very raw facsimile of that. I don't see why he couldn't.
But Jeremy Grant was very raw coming out of high school, out of college too. Like, it took Jeremy Grant a few years to be Jeremy Grant.
That's what I mean, like a facsimile. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying OG Anunoby, but we can get there.
No, put the work. I could definitely see him showing flashes of it. It's just with rookies, it's hard to be. You're tested so much off ball that there's very, very few rookies that are positive impact players. So Precious, an energy guy, extremely athletic, runs the floor hard, can finish in transition, and can, like you said, can defend well. You want him to just be the guy who certain wing matchups that he's guarding him one-on-one, so he doesn't have to worry about off-ball stuff or switch lineups. So he's just as simple as possible. He's not worried about double screening, calling out this, calling out that. He's doing this as little as possible, basically. Mm-hmm. And that's how you, that's basically Spo's best way to maximize him, which, you know, you can have him in the Jay Crowder role in that, because, you know, Bam will help him if Bam's in there. Myers will help him because they will talk and they will tell him to, you know, pull the string when Myers goes to help. Pressure's got to drop down and make sure he's at the rim. Pressure's a really good rim protector, and he was on one of the best defensive teams in college last year in Memphis. And he, I think he was third in blocks for out of rookies, out of freshmen.
Like I saw, you know, we kind of joked when they picked him, but like I honestly really see the vision. And you know, even if they play him with like Goron, right, that really simplifies his offensive role. You're going to screen, you're going to screen for Goron. We talked about this last time. Goron's a great, you know, lob thrower now. You know, he's really improved that since he got into Miami. It's a good, nice target for you. Kind of gets you downhill, you know, jump out of the gym. Young guys like that. It's a pretty, pretty easy role. And they could still play him at four with Olynyk. You know what I mean? So if you have KO and Precious, you know, you could throw out KO, Precious, Goron, you know, one of Tyler and Dunk, and then, you know, plus one more if it's Andre or whatever. And, you know, that's I like that. I like that offensively. I like that. I think it survives defensively. And I think, you know, you really kind of make it easy for him, especially with all those vets.
Yeah. I think that's kind of going to be the fit. Like, he's going to be your four, probably operates as the five offensively, just because, you know, he's still developing the shot right now, and he's going to be better utilized as a dive man just because of the vertical pop that he has, catch radius that he has, things like that. You know, defensively, he's going to be a blank slate, I feel like. I mean, right now, he's really good, help side defender. Frankie talked about his college resume a little bit earlier. He does have the frame to deal with, like, those power wings and those kind of guys kind of thrive at the four now. So he will be able to take on those matchups, kind of be that weak side protector if the other big is brought out of the paint. So, like, there is a path for him. I mean, there's a pretty clear path to him being a productive rookie. It's just going to depend on how early Spo gives him reps and what that leash is going to look like.
I mean, they've been good at that. I mean, like, going from Justice to Josh to Nunn to Tyler to Bam. I mean, they've gotten really productive rookies. So I'm kind of done doubting that they're going to get something. Maybe we're jumping the gun. I don't know. But I wasn't crazy about the pick, but I've really bought in. I really like what they did. I really like the fit. And I think, you know, if even like kind of something tantalizing, if he's ready at the end of the season, if he's what we think he could be defensively, just the athleticism and the size of putting him, Jimmy, and Bam kind of in your front court, that's nice. It's nice. Mm-hmm. That's really exciting. The other guy who's going to be a big part of their defense, especially in the playoffs, is Andre. Now, I am done with Andre at the five. I don't know. I don't want to see it ever again. I don't know why Spo likes it so much. It had like one good quarter against the Celtics. And then I don't know. I'm very low on Andre just in general. I'm not excited. I look at him as a $50 million expiring contract. I don't know if that's mean. I don't see a lot of regular season utility for him. You know, I'd just rather give those minutes to Precious, right? Like, I'm not really sure what the role is kind of next season.
Frankly. Well, he's going to be like a 10th, 11th guy right now for them, most likely. You know, I see him, like, unless Myers starts, it's probably going to be, you know, night to night matchup based, about, you know, Jimmy needs a night off. Jimmy's in foul trouble, stuff like that. Trying to get a smart defender in there. I don't see Andre playing a whole lot. He didn't show a lot. I mean, part of that could have been rust. He only played like 20 something games, and that was all with the Heat last year, because of his holdout. So maybe, you know, maybe
call it what it is.
So maybe, you know, with training camp, he gets fresh, he's ready to go. Maybe he's more back to you know, old Andre, and he's smart cutter, good passer, and he can play better. Maybe not playing him at the five will help too, but I don't know, man. I don't really like playing Andre at the four either. So it's tough.
I don't like it either. Like, I like him as a three. Just be a three. You can switch if in case of emergency, You know, he's he is a really good help defender, and I think he's still good on screens, you know, better than a lot of other guys.
And he's got great hands. His hands don't get old. He's great at helping, picking pockets, playing the passing lanes, stripping on the shots at the rim. You know, he's still really good at that. High IQ player, and he's going to talk, and he will bring value to your defense that way. It's all about offensively if he's going to bring anything at all. So, I mean, it remains to be seen. We got to see what kind of shape he's coming into, and we hope he's more of the old Andre, more of the Golden State Andre at the end, towards the end, and less of the Miami Heat Andre.
So we have two more guys that we're going to talk about, and I'm going to let Nikias, you're going to pick the next one. And I think these are two of the more interesting kind of high variance pieces. We have Duncan and we have KZ. Who would you rather, who would you like to talk about first?
Let me take KZ.
I think if KZ, he fans have mythologized KZ into something that I feel bad for him. I think he fans think he's going to be like, you know, this unicorn type player, which maybe he is. I don't know. I think in theory he is. I don't know if guys, have you seen how big he looks from the summer workouts?
Yeah, and like kind of similar to the Mo Harkless shooting comp, like the bar is kind of the floor in terms of KZ having a little bigger because he was just literally a stick figure when he came in.
He's like, big now. He's yoked.
But it's very encouraging that he has added some weight. Like the Heat's strength and conditioning program is no joke. Like the dietary purpose is no joke. I'm glad that he's bulked up some. I'm interested to see like what that does for like his lateral quickness. If he hasn't lost that at all, then KZ becomes very, very, very intriguing defensively at least. Because you've seen what he can do like at the edge of a zone because he's just all arms and he's a good athlete. And he has those off-ball instincts. Like he has a lot of tools and like he has enough ball skills to be interested in. So like I get the intrigue of him. Like I just need to see like what it looks like. I want to see him in the preseason. Like I'm sure he's going to get some burn when it's the first preseason game, just coming Monday, I believe.
Yeah, against December 14th.
So I want to see what kind of leash he gets. I want to see him attack a bit defense and see what he can do, if there are any reads that he can make on the move. Defensively, like at worst, he's going to be a guy that plays the passing lanes. And a guy that can like grab and go after a defensive rebound. So just very intriguing young guy. I just want to see. I think if Andre Iguodala is really going to be kind of like a spot player during the regular season, that's the path for KZ to get some regular season minutes.
I think between him and Precious, like it's really exciting. Like I think the high end of what, you know, I think if KZ can be like a league average shooter, you know, plus the ball skill that he has, you know, plus kind of the tantalizing upside on defense, it's kind of the perfect guy to replace Jay Crowder. Cause like, I want you guys to like look Google, you know, KZ Okpala 2020, you know, like he looks big, right? And if he's going to be able to guard up those positions and if he's going to be able to kind of be really, really effective in that zone that Miami really likes and like teams are like, I think Miami's now Philly's going to be a concern for them again. You know what I mean? Now, like, you really got to worry about, okay, how are we going to deal with Simmons? How are we going to deal with Embiid? How are we going to deal with kind of these bigger, longer teams? And obviously, Boston's not going anywhere with Tatum. He's a guy that can also guard Jason Tatum, just like we talked about, you know, Harkless. They're going to have a lot of wing defenders to throw at people. And like I said, and that doesn't even count Jimmy Butler, who, you know, loves the assignment, loves the responsibility, is really good at it, and, you know, with this conserved kind of energy. Right. You know, we'll always have that Sacramento game. With KZ,
yes,
you know, forever. You know, I was pretty drunk at an alehouse. Frankie, I was at the alehouse, the Coral Gables alehouse.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I was gone. Oof. I was like five gin and tonics in, and I remember I was like for the quarter. Oh, KZ, look at him go! I don't even know if he played well. I don't know. I was too gone. But let me tell you something. Five gin and tonic beat was like all about KZ that night.
I thought I was gonna die at that Coral Gables Ale House one time.
Why? What happened?
I saw these like big European guys like in a group, and they're taking a picture, and I photobombed them, And I just jumped to the bar. So for last call, and these two humongous, like 6'5" German dudes come up to me, and then I'm like, oh my God. And they go, this is how we do it where we're from. And they take a picture with me. I was like, oh,
hey, they're nice. They're friendly.
Oh, they were so nice. They bought me a drink. It was awesome.
That's awesome. Look at that. Making friends at the Coral Gables Ale House.
Yeah, but KZ, man, KZ has become my Earl Baron. When
God,
oh, what a name. That's a deep cut.
God.
In 2006, when I heard Earl Baron was a Dirk Nowitzki guy in practice, I was so excited for his future. in 2K8, I made sure Earl Baron was getting a ton of minutes, a ton of development points.
Okay.
That's how much I believed in Earl Baron. And now we heard KZ was the Giannis guy in practice. I was hyped. I mean, I was a KZ fan when he was in college. Any ball handling forward is gonna win my heart. Shout out to Scotty, shout out to Tracy. I just love those kind of guys, just that talent at that size, the feel for the game. You hope for that the NBA speed slows down for him, that he can, you know, make a handle a little bit, make some passes, importantly defensively make an impact, not get lost and not have to play zone all the time when he's in the court. Yeah. But it's intriguing, man. KZ's only 21. He's got a full year in the G League. He's only 21.
They have so many young guys, Frankie. Like, we've talked about all these vets and young guys. Like, I think that they have, you know, for a team that just made the finals, you know, we're talking about such raw products like KZ, like Precious. You know, Tyler's coming into his second year. We don't know what Bam's next leap is. And the next guy, we're going to talk about Duncan. But, like, they have all these young guys. And then they have Goran, Jimmy, Mo Harkless, you know what I mean? Andre Iguodala, all these veterans, as Myers, Olynyk, right? You have all these veterans, Avery Bradley, that I think that they really have struck a balance of like, okay, we have a lot of young talent. We also have a lot of really good vets that we like. And I think oftentimes the Heat pick one or the other. Okay, we're going all young. Okay, we're going all vets with plus Josh and Justice, right? Like, it's never both, right? And I think that they struck a balance. They have a superstar at center who's, what is he, 23, 24 years old? How old's Bam? Something
23
years old. You know what I mean? And you have, and it's just kind of hit me right now. I'm like, it's so impressive. And like, we're talking about two guys back to back, KZ and Precious, or like what they can be defend. And like, maybe both of them work. Maybe one of them works, you know, maybe neither of them work, but mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you have a lot of lotto tickets. They have a lot of lotto tickets on this team, right? And, you know, Bam, they already won the lottery, right? That ticket won. And Tyler might be another winning ticket. You know what I mean? And then you have all these, it's just, and we have none too. I mean, like, maybe it wasn't the grand prize, but you know, you got a couple numbers and maybe you get $40. You know what I mean? It's not bad. It's pretty good.
And one thing about KZ real quick, before we go to Duncan, I think, you know, he got like half a season of the G League under his belt. And now that there's no G League season, I think a full season of NBA practice, you know, might do him some good. Might,
I think there is a G League. Isn't it like you have to pay, right? Like the teams have to pay per player.
From what I've seen, like, they're going to have a G League bubble. And I think only, what did I read? I think 12 teams have opted in for it. And I think the Heat were one of the teams that opted out, which is interesting to me. So I guess they're going to have like KZ in tow. They're going to have Precious there.
I think so I think they're bracing for like injuries and stuff and like rest, like after the short off season for them.
And went so for that. I think that's kind of smart. Gabe Vincent lineup.
Oh, Gabe.
Wasn't that in the Sacramento game? Didn't Gabe play in that game? Maybe this has already happened.
Was that the game that Gabe came in and hit like his first like two or three threes?
That might have been Orlando, or I might be confusing him with Henry Walker.
No, it wasn't Henry Walker.
I mean, like, who remembers that? Speaking of wings, remember that Henry Walker game in Orlando?
Good old Billiam.
Oh man, that's so old school Heat Twitter.
State legend.
That was a fun season. Was that the season that Beasley and Zoran went off the last game?
Yeah, that was not a fun season.
I don't know. In retrospect, it was fun because of the joke, because of Billiam, because of Zoran, the last Beasley go off.
James Ennis, the savior.
Oh, God.
Freaking James Ennis. Never learned how to dribble.
He's off Philly, right?
No, James Ennis is back in Orlando.
Oh, look at good for you, James Ennis. Well, full circle.
Well,
I want to get to Duncan. Now, I think Duncan might be like, obviously, like, you know, Jimmy and Bam and Goran, whatever. But like after those guys, my favorite player to watch on this team, more than Tyler, and I might be a hot take. I am in love with everything that Duncan does offensively. I expect everything that he shoots to go in. The movement is incredible. The screening, just his relocation is just fucking rageous. Like, good defenders are losing him because they think he's somewhere and then he just relocates. And that's exhausting to defend. And I think Danny Green or who was it, Kuzma or whatever, the video of them losing him, like they look back, oh, where'd he go? and he's just like always moving. And it's like such a cliche, but like, and I've said this before, but Coach David Thorpe talked about on a podcast with Dave Dufour, or was it Zach Lowe? I don't remember. But he talked on a podcast about they're teaching people, kids, like, you know, developmental guys, how to move like Duncan, how to stop your body and go up vertically like Duncan. Like, he's just like legitimately changing the way people coach that kind of player. Right? Used to be JJ Redick, and now they're like, well, we're going to teach you how to be Duncan Robinson. It's just fucking crazy. He's Duncan Robinson. He was like this big. He was a stick figure. The size of my pinky last season. He played a million minutes in Dwayne's game against the Nets. And I'm like, why is he here? What is he? What are they doing? Spo, what are you doing? Like, it's so confusing.
It was the passing of the torch on that Dwayne assist on that lob.
Bro, it's crazy, dude. It's like, and then the guys mentioned the comments and yeah, Doug's a great shooter. And like, well, I was like, yeah, okay, Spo, I've watched him. Yeah, okay. He's just, you know, he's white and he's skinny. You're just saying that. The dude is unreal. You know, unfortunately, that Clay's not going to play. I mean, he very may well be the second best shooter in the league. You know what I mean? Like, just the volume, the movement, the partnership with Bam. Like, I think it was 1.5 points per 1.2 points per possession. Every Bam Duncan handoff, like
1.25.
That's crazy. They're like scoring over a point every time they run that action. It's so fucking automatic.
It's ridiculous. And, you know, just kind of looking ahead, I'm looking at the contract that Joe Harris just got this offseason. I think 475 is what he got. Mm-hmm. And like, Harris is better than Duncan Robinson, but also Duncan is bigger. He is a little bit younger.
You said like, who's Duncan, better than Duncan Robinson?
I think Joe Harris is better than Duncan Robinson.
Because of the defense? Overall player.
Because of the overall player.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, he is a better defender. Harris can do a little bit more ball.
Okay.
He is a better finisher as well. I mean, the volume low, but he does have a little bit more to his game. So, like, I think Harris is better, but also Duncan is bigger. He's younger. He has really set himself up to get paid next year, and he's earned it because he has turned himself into the ultimate off-ball weapon. Like you mentioned, the chemistry Diaz and dribble handoffs, the way that he relocates, the way that he screens and then pops out when Miami goes into that goes into their post-split action. Like, he is a very underrated screener.
Yeah.
And I think that you can see the influence from Golden State, from Clay, from Steph, with the way those guys, that's what makes them so dangerous. Like, those guys don't just get in the way. And with them being as great as shooters as they are, getting in the way and then running can be enough to bend the defense. They make contact and then they sprint full speed. And it just puts your defense in such a frenzy when you're dealing with that kind of connection and that kind of speed and that kind of threat from the perimeter. And Duncan Robinson does everything at 100 miles per hour. Like, and that just makes him so much difficult to defend.
You want to hear something crazy?
Yes.
So I mentioned earlier that, you know, corner threes are like a great indicator of how good of a shooter you are, just as a base, because there's a lot of catch and shoot. Duncan shot 49.3% from the corners.
It's crazy.
That's basically a layup.
A little less, but yeah, I think that's insane. Like, I couldn't believe watching the playoffs last season how fucking scared of Duncan these teams were. The way that they would plan their defense around that handoff action. Like, they're terrified of him. And the Lakers were sending three guys sometimes. They'd have AD kind of dropped, and then they'd have two guys come for Duncan, right? And I'm just like, it's Duncan Robinson. This is hilarious. Like, he's, like, scaring people. And then they're like, okay, well, AD, you got to step up on Duncan Robinson. And it's like, what?
He was a Skyforce legend last year, and then he's starting in the finals. And, like, he was the number one schemed option in the finals, which is insane.
Nikai, would you guys say that he was the guy that teams most scheme for on the Heat? That day one, coaches come in and they're, okay, the first thing on the board, Duncan.
Yeah, because, like, with Bam and Jimmy, like, not to take away how good they are, because they are, like, they're both top 15 players in the league. But just in terms of what they do, they're very easy to scheme for. Like, Jimmy, duck under picks, make him shoot jumpers. Bam, you know, play off of him, make him shoot. Make him beat you off the dribble. Like, you don't want him to get downhill alone.
You dare,
get
to the rim. You, dare
like
you to do that.
Like, that's the defense. They're like, you know, Jimmy's good enough to make you pay with the rescreens and things like that. Bam is good enough to make you pay because he just flips into those handoffs. But, like, just in terms of the game plan, it's very point blank. Go under, play off. With Duncan, it's okay, you know, chase him off of screens, but trail him in a certain way, because if you trail him this way, he'll reverse course on you, or he'll catch it, jump up like he's going to take a shot, flip it back to Bam, and then go back the other way. Like, you can't even just say run him off the line because he has built-in counters now. And then you get into, like, the second half of the season to where teams are trying to blitz those handoffs, and now Duncan is slipping in pocket passes.
I love that.
So, like, now you can't even really do that. So, like, you know, Toronto, they had the personnel to switch the handoff. So I think now for Duncan, the next counter is going to be either you just got the fire anyway when teams are mid-switch, or you're going to have some kind of two-dribble package. It's two dribbles into an elbow jumper. It's two dribbles get to the rim. Maybe it's two dribbles, flip the ball back, and then fly off another handoff. I think it's what can you do with two dribbles now with Duncan? Because when it's just coming off the catch, or if it's one dribble, he has the ability to fire over a contest or slip in that pocket pass and then turns into a 4-on-3. It's what he can do after two dribbles now. And if that develops,
watch out.
Good luck. Like, I don't know what you do when you compare that to what everything else the Heat are going to have on the floor.
So he talked a little bit about kind of getting a mid-range, kind of working on that mid-range. And I imagine he means a pull-up, right? The other thing is, I've talked about a lot about how Toronto switched that, because I imagine, and I was surprised more teams didn't mimic that in the playoffs. I thought, like, for example, Milwaukee had the personnel and they just didn't do it. I thought the Celtics did too, by the way. I mean, I think with Smart and the guys, I think that they had the personnel to switch it that way, because, like, at the end of the day, it was Norman Powell fronting Bam, right, to kind of prevent that pass off that switch, which is, you know, as much as I love Norm, like, it's just Norman Powell, dude. And I think a little bit falls on Bam. Like, you got to be able to punish those smaller matchups. And we talked about that during the Bigs preview, but, like, if you're Bam, right, so if they switch that, and now all of a sudden, if you're Duncan, you have a guy like OG Anunoby on you, which is, you know, it's just really tough at that point. Yeah, that's one of the, he's a guy that I said could be, you know, an all defensive player next year, or the defensive player of the year. You know, at that point, you can kind of flip that into another handoff. So have Goran or Tyler kind of come from the other side and then re-get Bam sealing his man. And now, big fella, you gotta pretend that guy's Miles Turner and score some points, because, you know, you gotta punish smaller guys. Like, that can't fall on, like, your limited shooter.
Yeah, next step. So he just has to have that constant aggression. Like, he has to punish smaller guys. You have to have Eastern Conference Finals Bam for 72 games.
Game six Bam.
Which, oh man, just put Daniel Tice in a blender. What a time.
Dave Dufour's mentions were melting in real time. I felt so bad for Dave.
Dave, he put him in a washer machine.
Oh my God. I was like, oh, stop it, Twitter. This is poor. That was a rough series for Dave. I love you, Dave. Dave's good. Dave's a friend. I look forward to everything that Duncan has next season. I'm excited. I think that the Heat have a potential to be a top five offense next season. They ended up, like, seventh, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were, like, around seven. I think there's a lot to improve on. I think that kind of, especially as the season went on, they really found their footing as to what they wanted to do offensively. This wasn't an offseason for the offense. It wasn't, because, you know, Jay Crowder helped them on offense more than I think Mo Harkless will. I think the high end of Mo Harkless is maybe, you know, about what Jay Crowder gave you at his high end. So I think it's a pretty lateral move. And I think Avery Bradley helps them a little bit. They're largely kind of the same team. You know, I don't know if Avery's going to play high stakes playoff minutes, but he'll help you in the regular season survive. And I think Harkless the same. And, you know, it depends on what you have with Precious and KZ and all that. I'm excited. I imagine they're going to have a better regular season than last year. I think guys know their role. I think that they're probably going to have a better offense. Everybody's going to be a little better. You expect Bam to take that leap. You expect Tyler to take another leap. I think maybe, you know, you maybe expect Goron to decline a little bit, right? And I think that that's the other thing that we haven't talked a lot about, but, you know, as long as that decline can get mitigated, you know, and if Jimmy kind of stays the course, you know, plus your other internal improvements, I think that you're in a good spot if Goron doesn't fall off a cliff.
Yeah, and that's partly why Miami's depth is going to matter so much this season. I mean, short turnaround, you know, Goron's coming off the injury as well. You have to account for that. But just having so many guys and so many different lineup combinations they can throw out, they really can pace themselves in a way that they couldn't last year. And that's going to be exciting. Like, the Heat are playing for 16 games. Like, they're obviously going to care about the regular season to build habits, to see what the young guys can do on the nights that they're resting guys or whatever. You know, we may see some Precious, we may see some KZ, whatever. But they are building towards their 16-game season. And I think the Heat have more horses to kind of get them through this kind of marathon now than they did last year. I think it's going to be huge for them moving forward.
This is going to be a weird season, Frankie. It's going to be weird. There's going to be a lot of injuries. There's going to be a lot of COVID shit. I mean, it's weird. It's going to be weird. I mean, we've spent 3 podcasts and this is probably 4 hours talking about every player on this team in depth, and it may just get nuked because, you know, somebody didn't disinfect their hands properly from, you know, getting a coffee.
Yeah. A friend of mine mentioned how it's kind of like sad, but like it's for some teams, like it was kind of good that some players got COVID already.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I was like, damn, like I get what you're saying.
Didn't
like,
Nick Saban get it twice?
No, he had a false positive, and he had to keep retaking the test.
That's hello. Oh my God, I'm here thinking like this old man caught it twice and lived. That's privilege.
Yeah, he took the milkshake that Trump did. that cocktail. But no, man, I expect it to be weird. It's going to be scary with all the COVID stuff and the traveling and everything. And like a lot of people, you know, obviously would prefer a bubble, but it seemed like so hard for the players. I couldn't imagine wanting to do that for the whole season.
That shit looks like it sucks.
Yeah, man. And like I presume they do something like if it's still bad by the time of playoffs, you know, they probably might do like a playoff bubble similar to what they did.
Maybe like a round conference finals to finals bubble.
Yeah, something like that, just so they can, you know, like mitigate.
And baseball do that?
Minimize all the issue. Kind of. They did games all in the same place in Texas here, but they were just staying in the hotels. They didn't have like, you know, they weren't shutting everything down, closing everything off for them.
Listen, it's gonna be fun. It's gonna be exciting. There's a trade deadline that's probably gonna be batshit crazy because of all this Harden nonsense, and Beal can now finally get moved, and it's gonna be I guess let me ask you guys on the way out, because you are two of the smartest people I've ever talked to, especially about basketball. You know, if a Harden deal comes down to Tyler and Duncan, you know, you do that immediately, right? I see a lot of people in the timeline kind of discussing that.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like no period. Question.
Yes.
That's like everybody but Jimmy and Bam.
Yeah.
I don't even like Harden that much, and I do it.
I mean, you just gotta have to.
Yeah, it's like he turns whatever you have, your scraps, into a top 3 offense. So, and we were top seven as is. So, and Harden's not, you know, for as bad as he is defensively, it's all off ball. It's not like Tyler where they can, or Duncan that they can pick at you and they're going at you.
Oh, no, he gets picked on plenty.
No, but he gets picked. He doesn't get picked on. Like LeBron isn't going to ISO Harden. And it's going to be like an automatic layup like it is against those other guys.
Anybody a foot smaller than LeBron's an automatic layup.
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying like Harden's strong. Like he's not going to be a horrible one-on-one defender. His problem is tracking guys off the ball and stuff like that. And if you trade for Harden, you're going to be a switch team. You're going to have Harden, Jimmy, and Bam. You're going to be a switch team anyway. So it'll be mitigated disaster.
You worried about the coexistence of with Jimmy as a non-shooter with Harden?
No. I think you can work on that plenty. I think Jimmy will be closer to his career averages shooting. And then James just gets so much attention on the ball that it'll help. Loosen up the wheels on the back end.
I think Miami has like a low key, like nice package for him. If you include Duncan, so you have Tyler Dunk, whatever treasure trove of picks starting with 2025 that you can move, plus, you know, expiring money for the cheapest fucking owner I've ever seen in my life. Right. So you get a lot of money off his books with Olenek and with Andre and whatever. And if I don't know if they have a wink wink with Myers that we trade you for salary purpose. I don't, you know what I mean? Like that. I think they have a lot of horses and juice in trades, you know, because they have, I think as much as they may say, and they may like Tyler, I think to get a blue chip superstar, I think they have a young guy that's good enough that could get you in the door. Not a
and
lot
they
of
baby Giannis.
And isn't it crazy to say baby Giannis that a guy like Tyler for them, like they can move off of it. Like they have two of these guys with Bam and Tyler that they're like, yeah, we don't have to give up our best blue chip young prospect. We give up our second best blue chip young prospect.
Hold on. I feel like that's a lot of disrespect to Bam. Bam is already a proven.
Oh yeah. No.
All NBA guy.
That's why like, I said blue chip young.
Like, no, but I'm saying 13th like
best player in the damn league.
Like if Miami offered Bam for Harden, the deal would be done.
No, Miami said no. Miami doesn't do
that. No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying they should.
Do you do
I'm
that, Nikias? If it's just Bam for Harden straight up, pretend salaries don't matter.
No.
Yeah, me neither. I'm there. Hell yeah. Let's go.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like comparing Bam, like Bam is a blue chip prospect. He's a star. He's proven already. Tyler is still a prospect. Tyler still hasn't started for the majority of his career. He's an exciting young prospect, a bench guy. He's got a lot to prove before he's like a blue chip guy.
I think this
this season is huge for him. I think he's got a lot of potential. I think like, you know, like a lot of people feel like his best case scenario is similar to like what Bradley Beal is. And that is all NBA player. So that's very high praise. Tyler hasn't done anything close to proving that he's that kind of player yet.
I'm excited. Okay. Before we go, because now that we've gone through every player, let's project our starters. Let's start with Nikias. Who do you think are the likely, if you know, not who's the best five, but who do you think is really what they're going to use for the regular season?
What I think they're going to do.
What you think?
I think they're going to go. I think they go Hero, Robinson, Butler, Bam, Leonard.
So you have both of the shooters. What about you, Frankie?
I think it's going to be to start. It's going to be Avery, Duncan, Jimmy, Bam, and Leonard.
I think we're all in agreement that Bam and Leonard are it. I'm also, you know, Jimmy's obviously a lock. I think Duncan's a lock. I know some people have kind of hinted maybe otherwise, but I don't think that there's just any way that guy is not going to play with your starters. I think at that point I think it'll be between Nunn and Avery.
I just think that Tyler off the bench is nice, especially when you're playing with Precious and Goran. You really want to give Goran an elite floor spacer. And I think it just makes sense. And I think eventually maybe Tyler can get to that starting role, maybe in the playoffs or whatever, but I just think it makes sense. And also, we mentioned this last, I think Christian joked about it. They got to get Nunn some minutes because you kind of want his value to be something. That's not a joke. True. I mean, they just can't, you know, stash them, never use them, and then try to be like, hey, you want them?
Yeah, I mean, they could go back to that starting lineup that they ran the majority of the year.
I don't think it'd be a bad choice.
No.
I think the big question, I think we all agree, the big question is going to be the starting guard spot. Starting point guard spot.
Yeah. I say, and to be clear, like, if it were up to me, like, I would go with Frankie's lineup. Like, I think Bradley should start the one. I do think that they're probably going to put a lot of stock into what Hero did last postseason, kind of projecting him upward. And also, like, if you're thinking of Hero being a guy that can get you a Beal or a Harden or a Giannis in a sign and trade if it comes down to it or whatever, then you might want to showcase him as a starter. And like, he already has chemistry with your key guys anyway. So I think it would be an easy transition there. So that's why I'm thinking that they're going to start Hero. I would start Bradley because I think you want that point of attack defense, but I can understand that he is kind of throwing their guns out there.
I think with Myers, it makes sense to start Bradley.
Yeah. One quick thing. We talked about the coverage on defense, what they're going to do if it's drop or switch heavy. I think they got so much faster defensively. I would be interested in seeing how the blitzing lineups look, you know, a little bit more hedging, a little bit more aggressiveness. Avery Bradley's tremendous picking pockets. You know, he's great going over screens, and Bam's so athletic, especially when you play him at the four. He's so long and athletic with pressures too. That's an easy thing to do. Just edge and double trap. And you got guys like Jimmy, you got guys like Mo Harkless that are long, athletic, and can just read the passing lanes, and Andre too, that I'd be interested in seeing how that looks.
I just think that if you're gonna, you know, this is a team that I think would benefit a lot from running. Not that they have a ton of athletic guys, but they have enough shooters that in kind of mid-transition, that's just so fucking horrifying when Duncan and Tyler are your trailers. And, you know, Bam kind of darting to the rim. And I think Andre's...
Ed Precious, too.
Yeah, like I think that getting out... I just don't think they're going to have the guys. You know, there's no Dwayne. They don't have a lot of guys in the wing that's going to get a lot of steals. Maybe Butler and Bradley, but I don't know if they're going to have enough on the wing to do that.
No, that's why I say, like, they can create the pressure, and it kind of takes, it's kind of like goes back to like what they did with the big three, where they use Bosh and made him hedge and trap and stunt and recover.
But the difference there was the guy that's kind of closing that space and making the decision between the guy in the corner and then the on-ball guy was Dwayne Wade, who's not only a freak athlete, but a fucking genius. Listen,
Jimothy Butler can do it.
Oh, Jimmy can. I don't doubt Jimmy can. I start having questions when it's, you know, Avery and Goran and, you know, Mo Harkless. I start having questions.
They did it with Ray Allen and Shane Battier and Mike Miller. They did it with slow guys. So it's not like...
What am I talking about? They made Gerald Green an efficient defender. Who am I kidding?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's like a full system. I'm saying like they can throw it in spots. I'd be curious with certain lineups, like Avery, Jimmy, Bam lineups that you have three plus defenders and can create some pressure and run in transition, which they were so bad in transition last year.
Oh God, they really got to get better. And I think the athletes are going to help. Everybody, thank you so much for coming today, kind of talking, putting the bow on this preview for this Miami Heat season. They have a lot of expectations coming off. It feels good to cover a good team. It didn't really feel that way halfway through the regular season last season. They were kind of the three seed for a while, and then they started losing to Charlotte and the Knicks and the Nets and the Wizards. And it got dicey, but it's good to be back.
Oh my Garrison God. Matthews. Cam Reddish decided I'm going to be a competent NBA player against the Miami Heat.
Awful.
It feels good to have a season preview where we're talking about finals aspirations, playoff rotations, all that stuff. It's really exciting. We have so much at Heat Beat planned for you this season. We have a couple announcements kind of coming really soon that I think gonna get fans of us really excited. We have tons of cool stuff coming. Mentioned on the top, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. We're trying to grow this audience. It means a lot to us. Follow us on Twitter at MIA Heat Beat, myself at GNavis103, at Nikias MBA, and at Frankie G underscore. I get it right?
Yep.
Let's go. Nikias is the only person who has MBA in their title who's actually cool.
It's hard to disagree. Very hard to disagree. We're not going to disrespect Chris Herring like this.
Oh, no, Chris Herring. No, I will not disrespect. Chris Herring's great. Oh, my favorite low post guest. Chris Herring's amazing. Go, Chris Herring's that guy. Chris Herring, come on.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.